Yes, team. A huge welcome back to the Total Mental Performance podcast. Today we've got Jake Abbott. And how I come across Jake is I said to Ben Hawksworth, who we both work with, I've mentored Ben. He's Jake's worked with him too. Ben's looking after all of our stuff from the coach consultant. I said, Ben, I want some really cool coaches onto the podcast. Someone that can, you know, really give us some interesting perspectives that are open to mindset, mental performance, and has a bit of a story. And he goes, speak to Jake. And then he just, I think he messaged you. You said, thumbs up, I'm in. And then that was it. And here we are.
Here we are.
You're
going to regret this decision, I'm sure.
Well, I like that start because usually they're the most fun podcasts. So,
Look, thank you for having me on, Kieran. Like, it's to have Ben, who I aspire, you know, to be with someone who's really made it in the industry and watched his journey. And then I saw some little touch points from you and I was thinking, oh, who's this guy? This looks really interesting, because that kind of mindset, mental performance, life coaching element is something that I'm, you know, massively into with my clients and my own journey. But then, for Ben to say you were looking for someone and he said he asked me was a really nice honour. So, yeah.
Awesome.
Should be good. Awesome. And you mentioned to me as well before the call, we were saying, like, is there anything off kilter, like off scope? I was like, no. Open book.
All right, let's rip. So if he's going to give somebody a two-liner on what you do and what would you say that is?
A two-liner on what I do?
Yeah, I stitched you up there, mate.
So I'm an ex-professional rugby player for 10 years for Worcester Warriors, and I did a World Series with England Sevens. And I reached some heights there to have a pretty tremendous downfall with mental health. Anxiety, depression, diagnosis with some extensive psychotherapy of being psychothymics on the scale of bipolar. And then I am now, through all that journey, from sport, the straitjacket sports science to mental health and life experience from love and loss and everything that life brings anyone, doesn't avail anyone, you know, kind of sorrow and mistakes that we make. I've become high expert online coach and life coach who is relentless in the pursuit of anyone's happiness. Anyone who wants to work with me, that's what I'll do for them.
Oh, mate. I love that. Yeah. Well, Jake asked me my background and I said, I'll tell you what, let's just hit record and then let's just do it from there. So without running off into that, I'd feel like I'd cheated you there a little bit. But Jake, my background, I'm Kieran. I'm the founder of Total Mental Performance. So we're a team of mental performance coaches. So we work with coaches and entrepreneurs ultimately to help them think, feel and perform in a completely different way. But we only work with the mind. We don't work with any fitness coaching or anything like that. My background, spent 8 years as a boxer, reaching the national team, which was great. But it ended up in an eating disorder, anxiety, depression, and tried to take my own life. It was through boxing that I learned from a lady called Hazel Gale, former kickboxing world champion and performance coach to some of the top athletes across England and GB. And she's also a therapist, so she saved my life. She helped me perform really well, right, and then helped me like actually get out of that hole. She was amazing, amazing woman. I wouldn't be here without her. And I took all of everything I learned from there into software sales. So I spent 6 years in software sales in London, selling into across Europe and then back over into the States too, which was great. Made lots of money, but I've become very unhappy. Like, unhappy myself, unhappy with what I was doing. I ended up burning out, ended up partying a lot. Every single Friday, we'd fly out somewhere and just get off our fucking faces on alcohol, drugs, everything to try and just cope with the pressure and the stress and the insecurity. And then, you know, running back into sales, it's pretty full on. And then through that journey, I realized I enjoyed helping other salespeople more than I did actually closing deals. So then I kind of think, okay, well, what else? And I was always interested in therapy. So I restudied as a cognitive therapist and NLP practitioner, started coaching people for free. They all started paying me, got invited to do some speaking gigs. Then I was fully booked. And then 3 years ago, I launched Total Mental Performance into what it is now. And it really just sort of grew pretty organically through that. So it sounds like we've got a lot of similarities in our story, our former athletes, mental health struggles. And yeah.
Yeah, that I'd like, it's that you kind of, you know, with your, was it boxing you said?
Yeah.
So it's when your whole identity from youth is like reaching that high, it's that tunnel vision. It takes almost like an obsessive addictive personality to get with anything. You've got to be a bit mad to be in a kind of top 1% in any kind of sport, I think, or any sector really, but sport in particular takes a lot of sacrifice. And I think that's my experience. Like, a lot of my youth and what was born within me and the kind of egomania and that absolute need for external validation and making mum and dad proud and all that, we can get stuck into all of the whys, because I've had to dig so deep down into my whys. And I think that's what made me reach heights, you know. But unfortunately, when that ends, and I think we can see this so much now with that change of identity from professional sport and trying to hit, you know, it's almost like Civvy Street in some kind of, yeah. And this is not to take anything away from like armed forces or military, but it's almost like you kind of trained a certain way and then your whole identity is encompassed into who you are. You know, you were Kieran, the boxer, I was Jake, the rugby player. When that stopped from injury, I didn't know who the fuck I was. And I think that coupled with being an addict, and I'm, you know, another whole scope of me is I'm an alcoholic and cocaine addict in recovery. So I'm a member of AA. That's a whole thing I do away from this. I sponsor people. I've done the steps. Into the whole spiritual growth. And I had to do that because I'm an addict, but I'm also an egomaniac with inferiority. I needed to be seen. And when I could sign autographs and I was on TV, it was great. And when that ended, I didn't know who I was. And I was quickly, you know, grasped by new highs, you know. And it, like you mentioned there, Kieran, I feel it's, maybe you could like empathize with this, is this idea of just like filling a hole in your soul. I didn't know who I was. I was previously married. We were madly in love, but fundamentally we weren't right. And I wanted to be Prince Charming. I couldn't face the fact I was unhappy. I was too cowardly to even say. And I destroyed that marriage. I destroyed my life, you know, for the point I tried to hang myself also. So yeah. I've been where you've been, and I can certainly feel that. But it takes that type of experience to be very good at what you do. You have to go through all those horrors, and I truly believe everything happens for a reason. So your experience is now placed there to help benefit other people.
Yeah. For sure. You think as coaches, we coach the younger versions of ourselves, and similar to you, as a kid, I felt insecure, not good enough. I was validating myself through my sport, through my body, through how much money I could make. And it was all around that. And a lot of the work I do with entrepreneurs and coaches is helping them realize that you're enough anyway. And, you know, you can still achieve and do amazing things, but it doesn't have to be out of darkness. It doesn't have to be out of anxiousness and fear and scarcity. It can be done out of abundance. It can be done out of, I just fucking enjoy what I do and I'm going to go after that. And when you kind of look at coaching through that frame, we teach the things that we most need to learn, and you're constantly telling your clients the same thing that you're reminding yourself of every single day.
It's two ways. It's like it's yin and yang, you know. You're helping yourself by helping other people, for sure.
Something I play with is when I feel like I'm giving it, you know, when you deliver it, you have a conversation with a client and you just feel that your heart and soul connecting with that individual. Sometimes what I do at the end is I write down what I've advised or what I feel like really landed. And then, so let's say you were my client and I was like, right, Jake, slow down to speed up. Remember, you've got more time than you think and you can really knock this out of the park. You don't have to do it out to prove itself. Do it because you just want to do it. And then what I do is I scribble out Jake and I write, Kieran, slow down to speed up. And honestly, it's a lot of the time, it's exactly what I need to hear in the moment, because that's what we do. We attract our own vibe, attracts our tribe, so to speak.
Do you feel like in that element, though, you know, I refer to this as being very selfishly selfless. So I always use this, like my blurb is like relentless in the pursuit of someone's happiness. So I'm inherently a very selfish person. So I'm very cunning, very baffling. I've had to learn that through my addictions, right, and hitting rock bottom. Because it takes a very selfish person to do things that they shouldn't. Against good conscience, I spent money on drugs, I stole, I was committed adultery. I did all sorts of things that I never thought I could do. It took me to realise that I'm completely selfish. But I use that, and it's almost like to use this idea of this conception of like, it's selfish for me, right? I'm absolutely non-stop with my clients. I say to them on these initial consult calls, like, I'm just going to walk, I'm like a parasite. And I won't leave you alone, but for good measure, because I want more. I'm not massively interested in you going from overweight to having abs. That's an outcome of the vehicle of nutrition and training that we use to work on the psychological aspects of your behavior and your mindset. So I feel like a lot of what I do, without me kind of building a syllabus from it, is a lot of that life coaching. But the point I'm trying to make is I do it because it makes me feel good.
Yeah.
And like my business partner, we've got like a separate kind of little passion project mentorship. And he's like, why do you work so hard? I was like, because I have to. Like I, away from having two beautiful young children and a wife, you know, and doing the housework, it's like, I just want to work for people. I am absolutely like obsessed with buying into someone and seeing them fulfill their potential and their happiness. And if that's them with an eight, if that's them with a six pack doing a photo shoot at the end of the year, that's that. If that's them kind of losing 5 stone, or it might be like them just one time getting in the gym that they could never do. It might be them just learning that walks are so profoundly important for their mental health. It might be them just taking back fucking control or improving their relationship. And it's like, what is the metric of success? But I do it because it makes me, it fills that hole in me that I've always had ever since a young boy. And I think, I feel like maybe there's a little hole in you that you fill by doing what you do now for other people. You help people flourish because it makes you feel good, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if you look at human behavior, it's always towards or away from, and we're conditioned to be away from pain versus towards pleasure, right? So
yeah,
we all do shit because it makes us feel good or it stops us feeling bad, right? So yeah. A lot of my work was of boxing and sales was, I don't want to feel not enough. And I think this is the first time I've found something where, sure, you have moments where you get triggered or you don't get the outcomes that you want. You're like, oh, fucking hell. But it doesn't stay around as much because I know that my mission on here, like my real mission is to bring psychological freedom to ambitious minds around the world. That's it. However, the vehicle that is that does
great
that.
Word, man. I love that.
Yeah.
Say that one more time.
Psychological freedom to ambitious minds around the world. But that's only because as a kid, I felt trapped. And you're always, that hole that you're talking about, that we're always trying to fill within ourselves, we're usually trying to do it in ways in which we just know from our environment, drugs or success or alcohol, whatever that might be.
Sex.
Yeah, like sex. That was a big rabbit hole I fell down too. I found for me that on the sex side, it was like, that was a stress response. So I used to say, I've got a really high sex drive, but actually it was an escape. And it was a way of getting out of the stress.
That was validation.
Yeah.
A desperate external validation. You know, that's what a lot of people, they like you mentioned there, you're not feeling enough. You know, why are people unfaithful? You know, monogamy in long-term relationships is difficult. You know, we're not fucking penguins. We didn't get to the top of the food tree by sitting there with one mater. But the way we've learned and evolved and adapted around love and you know, the institution of marriage and religious marriages and all of this is it, a lot of people I find in life now being an adult, I guess, when they commit adultery or they're unfaithful is kind of like fulfilling this need to feel enough. And also ties in with that excitement as well, doesn't it? It's that we're like dopamine rap. It's just fucking constant everything. And when you place that in a society that wants you to drink more, spend more, eat more, no wonder so many people are fucked because society's broken us. And nobody understands this stuff. Like, no one wants, also men never want to talk about it. So they cheat, they use drugs, they lie, and then they become as sick as those secrets. I was the epitome of that. I was as sick as my secrets, the shame that I felt and having to hide that mask. You know, I conditioned my own depression and anxiety. I completely conditioned it. It was my choice. And it took me all of that time to learn. It was, wow, the only person to blame, the only failure here was me, wasn't the world. And I think a lot of people do that, don't they? You know, whoever's watching this, we spend a lot of time blaming life. Oh, that, you know, this is the reason, that's the reason. Or I'm an anxious person, I always have been. And I will challenge people. I'll go, well, how is that? You know, you're not born with anxiety. You're not born scared of spiders and bees. It's conditioned because your parents teach you because they were scared of it. Or we watch stories about wolves and then we see a dog with teeth. We condition fear because it all boils down to fear, doesn't it? Fear of death, fear of failure, fear of not being seen, fear of not being loved, external validation. Like, I think the brain's a very rich tapestry. And I think it, you know, tapping into it in any way that people can, this is why this market is so big. People want to get more from the inner workings of what we do. And that, you know, when you coincide that with what I do, it's like, I use that vehicle, but I'm so much more interested in this stuff.
Yeah.
This is the stuff that lights me up.
The crazy thing is the brain named itself. Like, think about that.
That's great. I've not heard that.
The brain named itself. And My view of the mind is it's similar to Sam Harris, the neuroscientist, which is everything we experience in this reality comes through the mind. Thus, it makes sense to train it and use it. And when I look at it that way, we have a soul, we have intuition, we have all of these other things, but often the thing that fucks ambitious minds up the most is just their thinking. They're just the way in which they're habitually thinking, because they've always thought that the way. They've been taught to feel that, think that way. And thus that creates the feelings, which then creates action, which then trips them up. So it's getting to a place where, how can I observe my thinking, but not be my thinking? And that's the hardest bit. How can I observe, okay, I'm feeling anxious versus I am anxious. If you think about those words, I am anxious, I am anxiety, I'm inherently anxiousness yeah. itself. So I don't know, I'm experiencing anxiousness. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Which is human and completely regular.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's one thing I say to clients is they want it to go away. Yeah. They're like, I don't want to feel anxious anymore. I said, sorry, I'm not a miracle worker. That's not how this works. That's not how this works. It's learning to live.
Earlier in humans, we don't like sitting in pain. No. You know, we want to wrap ourselves up, we want to stay safe, and people aren't comfortable with sitting in pain, are they? That's a lot of life for me. It's like, what's my morality like? You know, how am I when no one can see what I'm doing? What would I do if nobody knew? Where's my morality status right now? Which is why I depend on a higher power these days, because I'm a spiritual being having a human experience. And I've had to kind of learn that and tap into this idea. It's like, I'm not God, because I thought I was fucking God. I ran the show and things didn't go my way. Resent builds, you know, all that conditioned experience from youth into adulthood. When things didn't go my way, what was my reaction? Well, turn to alcohol. Where was fucking me? You know, and then it developed from my own decisions that I've had to look back on. And now I've had to ruthlessly go through those defects of character. And now I just rely upon, well, it's not. It's like when people say fate, you know, people talk about fate, right? Or what will be, will be. My wife says very faithful things. Jenny talks about, well, if it was meant to be, it would be. But people don't like that conception. Because, like, human, you're kind of the reality state of what we live in. It's going to happen anyway. You know, it's going to happen. We have to, all we can do is control the controllables. So it's that, like, stoic ideal. It's like, we control what we can control within our circle. Everything outside is not really our business. So when you're uncomfortable sitting in pain because something's wrong, something's not going the way you want, how do people react? They don't like sitting in pain, so they eat more. They procrastinate. They look at their phone more. They sit still. They drink. They use drugs. They escape, like, this weekend behavior. Society just bleeds into this all the time. People don't like sitting in pain. They don't like sitting in their perceived reality, as opposed to, like you say, I am anxious or I'm feeling anxious. That's like the old idea of, like, your perception of what your reality is, or you can actually change what you think is reality based on what's going on around you. It's a choice. We have choice. That's the thing. People forget we have choice.
Yeah. I remember,
like you said, sorry to interrupt, you talk about the brain being a muscle and putting the reps in. Everyone wants to, like, people like me, put the reps in the gym. You progressive overload, you train hard, you build muscle. But no one really understands how to put the reps in on the brain, do they?
I think that's an education piece. So, yeah. For example, it's becoming, especially in the UK, in the US, they're miles ahead on this stuff. They've been having, like,
I lived in Texas for 2 years.
What's that?
I lived in Texas for 2 years.
Oh, amazing. So over there, it was normal to work with a psychologist or a therapist. Right, it's a very normal thing. Whereas in the UK, particularly when I was going for my eating disorder, I remember going to a NHS group eating disorder because the waiting list was so long. I didn't have any money at the time, so they put me in this room, and there's like 20 girls in there, and some of them were like models, because a lot of girls with eating disorders are like they're models, and I was so insecure and ashamed of my eating disorder anyway, because that, in quote unquote, was a girl's problem. You know, like, when did you ever hear of a guy having an eating disorder? Like, back then, yeah. You didn't. I remember walking into this room, stepping on the scales, where I was used to stepping on the scales and, like, you know, doing a double front, double bicep, like, I'm going to fight someone soon. And I was just so fragile and broken. Like, it was so far away. But I think it's an education thing. And if we look at, the UK has really been doing some catching up. And a lot of our work at TMP in the last 3 years is actually just educating the market Like, it still feels like this little black box of what is mental performance or what is working on the mind? Like, it's so blurry. Yeah. I don't know. And it's educating them. Look, you are the creator of your own universe. I think it was Rich Litvin. I read it, and he's my coach. Read it in his book, The Prosperous Coach. And he said, you are God with a little G. And at first, I didn't like that. At first, I didn't like that because I was like, who am I to say I'm God? Like, that's not me. But we are the creator of our experience. So we can't control how we necessarily respond in the instant animalistic, I'm angry or sad or whatever. But from there, it's our job to get back and go, okay, let's bring us back to a level of consciousness that is, okay, well, I'm okay, I'm safe, I'm all right, I've got this, I'm human, I can deal with that. So I think most people avoid that. And for those listening to this, I'm tapping my head. Most people are avoid that. Yeah, it's because they're afraid of, well, what if I go into a Pandora's box and I don't like what I open? It's like, no, you won't like what you open. But if you want to be the creator of your own universe, because you are the person that experiences this reality and it goes through your mind, then it makes sense to go in there and explore what's going on and what is underlying all of this. And as you said earlier, always comes back to childhood. For me, I felt trapped. I was ambitious. I was bright. I was an ADHD kid, so I couldn't concentrate in school. So I got messages, you're not enough. Sit down, concentrate. Stop. Why are you wriggling? Like, stop doing that. You should be doing better in your exams. All that nonsense. And then guess what? I create a story that I'm not enough and I need to prove myself through my body, through my financials, through all these various different areas. And it led to a lot of pain and chaos. And my ambition nearly destroyed me. That's what took me into that dark place. So here I am in the world with those experiences, and you've got the same experiences wanting similar outcomes for people, which is, well, you can achieve psychological freedom. That's not the absence of suffering. On the flip side, it's actually your ability to suffer and still perform and still find gratitude and enjoy what you do, even when the chips are down. You're like, I fucking hate this thing, but I got to find a way. That's what this is really about, and that's how I see the puzzle.
Yeah. Well, what stops people get going is it's always like, it's assuming when. So when that's happened, when I've got this job, when I make that money, when I have that car, when I have that house, it's then, it's when. And if you bring that to kind of my line of work, so I start the diet Monday, after Christmas, next month, I'll wait till I get that bit of work out of the way. And we're just always procrastinating because we don't want to, we have fear of failure, right? So encompassed within all of that upbringing with you, like everything boils down to fear for me. Everything is basic human level is fucking fear. And that's what makes people not want to do stuff. Like you mentioned there, people don't want to tap in because they're uncomfortable with looking inside. As well, like you bring into that this whole idea of like the social economic pressure of what it takes to be a man. Men don't talk about feelings, right? Men don't cry. Do you remember all that stuff? Like, thank mm-hmm. God we live in a society now where actually strength is, I'm seeing online coaches, you know, working with fitness coach, the Honest Life coach, TMP, like, people are now seeing that as strength. You know, it's not, I don't believe it's about like boys can cry. Of course you cry. Anyone can cry. It's not about boys can cry. But I think there needs to be this kind of like, I think what takes a man is someone who's going to rigorously work on themselves. That's your responsibility. And you mentioned there about being a child and those experiences and, you know, you're not good enough. You know, that are like institutionalized kind of school regime. You know, it doesn't fix someone. It doesn't work for someone who's got diagnosed ADHD. And it's much like with my children. You know, we refuse to tell our children that they're naughty. That's naughty. You're naughty. What are you doing to that child when you're pointing at them and shouting and telling them they're naughty all the time? They become that identity. And that's like, you know, that's a whole nother episode of stuff with parenting. And my wife is a deputy head teacher and she's worked in first school her whole career for 15 years. And she's taught me to be a better parent. That is one of the biggest responsibilities. You talk about your youth and your upbringing is all born from the way we were raised, right? Those first 5 years of experience were massive. So anyone who's watching this as a parent needs to understand the like being a parent is the hardest job in the world, which I think is the most highly qualified thing you need to do, but you don't need any qualification and anyone does it. And everyone does it. All of a sudden, people don't realize how important it is to give, like, I'm not here to be my children's best friend. I'm here to raise strong, resilient, confident children. And that's my job. And because of what, you know, me, and should I just to touch on my kind of upbringing? So I had a lovely upbringing, a wonderful mum and dad, two sisters. But when my sister died of cancer when she was seven, Kieran, this is where I worked it all out really with my therapist. Is I think the Jekyll and Hyde egomania inferiority was born from, like, when Rebecca died of cancer, my mum and dad's firstborn. There, how they got through that was incredible. And then coupled with that, my dad's brother, 15 weeks before Rebecca died, was driving down to see Rebecca. My dad's best friend fell asleep at the wheel and got decapitated. Oof. So he had his daughter dying. He was trying to help mummy. She was trying to raise three other children and work on raising a family and working and providing. Mum was obviously, they're pre-bereaving Rebecca's death. She's going through chemo. And then Uncle Neil dies. And Dad's having to go identify him by his fucking teeth. So you imagine what effect that had on those two adults. Mum's way of coping in particular, and I think Dad also somewhat, he was a bit more arcane, my dad. He was chauvinistic. But Mum's way of coping was to love us, protect us, wrap us in cotton wool. Mm-hmm. So that whole, like, mollycoddling. And that's what I think created this. I was the youngest child, created this desire, need to impress and be handsome and perfect and a good boy. You know, never had the tension in school. Always used to tuck my tie in, and I was always dressed properly because my dad taught me to, and became very sensitive. And I think that's where my birth of things, when they couldn't go my way, I started to lie about little things, trying to impress my teacher or impress my parents or my friends. And all of that, and that's not mum and dad's fault. That's just what happens. So I think this, we're born from all those experiences, like you say. But when you get to adulthood, I find, like, a lot of my friends, you hit 30, it's like, I think Pandora's box just hits you anyway. And you're like, oh, fuck. You know, 20s felt easy for me. 30s, I'm suddenly going, what the fuck? Who am I? Like, and what is this within me? And it's, I think it's a rich power. I refer to it as the fourth dimension. When you start to tap into yourself, your own defects of character, you can use it as, like, a superpower, I believe.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. And you know, when there's traumatic experiences like that in childhood, you don't really understand it as a kid. It's just like, 1 minute someone's there and then they're gone. It's like, oh, wow. Well,
I was 3 years old. You know, I thought my sister was hiding. I have one memory, which is crazy, from, like, 3 years old. Two, actually. I have one when my sister Rebecca was, I came out of the kind of utility toilet and she was stood there. My two twin sisters were left and right, and Rebecca said, oh, do you love us, Jake? And then the girls went, yeah, do you love us? I remember that like it was yesterday. And I've asked my mum and dad over years, and my late father, if that was repeated to me. And they, I think, not really. So I must have had this memory. And then the other one was saying goodbye to Rebecca when she was dying with Dr. Everett on the sofa. So, you know, but other than that, I just thought my sister was hiding, playing hide and seek.
Mm.
But the subsequent kind of cascade of that experience is what kind of created the man in me now.
Are you familiar with mirror neurons?
Never heard of it. Teach me.
This is super cool. I think it's going to resonate with you a lot. So when we're kids, imagine when your dad's angry and he'd walk through the door and you haven't even looked at him and you can just feel that he's angry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, and he maybe hasn't even slammed the door open. You just walked in and goes, something's wrong, right?
Yeah, you just smell it. Like.
Yeah. Or I don't know about you, but like the older and older I get, the more I'm turning into my dad. Like he always used to wear an Arsenal shirt and tracksuit bottoms when he'd watch the Arsenal. And I always used to think, Dad, you look so scruffy. And like, now, lo and behold, guess who's getting the old? I've actually got his Arsenal shirt on sometimes, the same shirt. Yeah, yeah.
They do say everyone becomes their father, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. But part of the reason why we can learn so quickly is because we pick up mirror neurons from our caregivers. So we're observing them on an unconscious level and we're feeling how they feel. We're absorbing a lot of that energy. So for me, my mum was very anxious. Amazing woman, amazing, amazing woman. But she's very, very anxious and afraid. And her mother passed away when she was 3 and she moved around a lot. So she used to smother me. So when you've got an anxious mother that would smother you, well, and you're an ADHD kid that wants to be free, like that, it creates a lot of stress. So through those mirror neurons and those experiences, I learned to become anxious and stressed and overwhelmed, and you absorb that. So a lot of our childhoods, we are just absorbing these things that are happening. So when you think about two highly traumatic experiences that happened to your family, even though you were too young to remember it, in air quotes, your body and your unconscious mind is absorbing all of this trauma, is absorbing all of this pressure, all of this stress. and the way in which they're coping with it, you're learning to cope with it. So if you're going to look at now, Jake, your own personal performance and how you operate and how you think and feel, because you said, ask me anything, let's go, let's throw a big question in.
Yeah, come at me, man. Let's do it.
When you look at your own personal performance and how you're operating, what are you pretending to not know about yourself right now?
What am I pretending to not know about myself? I like to base my life on being very rigorously honest. So I'd hope to think I don't pretend to not know anything. I think I know a lot about myself. I think I know everything about myself. I know every little dirty little secret character flaw because I've had to do that. So, you know, there's things that I wouldn't disclose to certain people based on the fact that, I'm not here to repent religiously, but, or not that I'm a religious entity, but I'm not here to repent. But yeah, I don't think there's anything I pretend to not know. Pretend to not know. It's almost like a double-ended question.
It doesn't have to be a big thing. It might be. So in terms of how you think and feel and operate, sometimes we push things aside. We forget, this men do this in particular, is we forget that we're stressed. Something I've learned recently with my own mentor is I'm more stressed than I realize. And I was pretending to not know it. For example, I'm just never hungry. I've never been hungry.
What do you mean?
Yeah.
So I know myself because I know my morality. And I work on not a plane of this. So like without going into the whole idea of you recovering within a fellowship, if anyone heard about it, it's a 12-step program. The second step is finding a power greater than yourself to return you back to sanity. So to lead on to why I feel I know myself very well is God is very absolute. My ideal of this higher power is absolute. So God sees and knows all. So this kind of like level plane of human experience, I'm working on the vertical. So I work on a lot of meditation and prayer. Now, I'm not a religious person, but because I was insane, I repeated something. Like Einstein states, you're doing the same thing, expecting a different outcome. That was the demise of my life, was escape, drink, drugs, lie, hide, steal, cheat. And it just created more secrets, more sickness. So I was repeating this thing all the time. I won't drink. And every time I went through a binge with drink or drugs and hit absolute rock bottom, I was throwing out my marital home. I was back with mum and dad. They're all forgiven. Sorry. I truly believed I'd never drink or use drugs again. But history kept repeating itself. And then you do a geographical, you go through a divorce, you think you're all right. And then you go on to the next idea. I'm going to become a bodybuilder. I'm going to do steroids and become Chris Bumstead. And it's another mind-altering substance. Leads me back to what? Drink. And then I'm starting to do that to my now wife. You know, I'm starting to make her suffer. My problems lie with me. So I had to go through that rigorous process of cleaning fucking house, hard out every little crook and corner of my personality, every dirty little secret thing. And I gave that away to my sponsor, God. I had to do that because I would never be able to remove those defects of character. Now, you don't go through those 12 steps and do your step 3 prayer where you ask your higher power to relieve me of the bondage of self. You know, we're human beings. We're like we were talking at the start of this podcast. We're fueled by things that make us feel good, with dopamine response. But then also the character defects from my code, my upbringing that we spoke about there, the ego, the external validation, the need, the jealousy, the resentment, the trying to be right all the time. And that, for those reasons, when I hit what my rock bottom was and why I'm such a grateful alcoholic in recovery, is because the 12-step program made me become very aware. So that I don't pretend to know that I find it very uncomfortable to sit still. I don't pretend to know that I find it really hard to not work. If I'm not progressing in business, if I'm not signing new clients, if I'm not working with TCC to elevate and scale this company, I understand that I have ego involved with that and status and social media presence, but I'm aware of it and I understand the good motive, which is creating a high sustainable income for my family, to create a pension, to have a nice life and provide for my children when they're older. And then I have the downside of that, which is the necessary evil of obviously it makes me feel fucking good. Because I'm an absolute alpha male and I'm an egomaniac and I want to fuel that. So there's healthy channels and unhealthy channels. So I definitely do not pretend to know that I work under a very high stress. And also I challenge anyone to come and see what I do for a day and how much I operate with. So I'm a singular coach with 116 clients and a separate business with 40 mentees, 2 kids. You know, I'm on it all day. And I train 4 times a week and I keep myself in shape. So, you know, I love what I do, but I think the one thing I pretend not I don't pretend to not know it, Kieran, but I ignore it, is I find it hard to sit still and relax. So my kind of that, am I okay just being? Can I chill the fuck out? And I think that's probably people who watch this, these kind of high functioning entrepreneurs, serial fucking workers, bang, 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 bang. And I think a lot of that is kind of that we struggle to just sit and be. And then the big question is, why is that? So why, what is it about you that you don't like? What's in that mirror? You know how you talk about Pandora's box? So that's like something that I have to work on, and I use inventory to do that. So I kind of look at why, what have I got? What did I do right today? What did I do wrong? Why am I servicing my family? You know, why am I desperate to assume to be the great husband and be so wonderful with my kids? Well, largely, if I'm really honest, it's because I want my wife to have sex with me tonight because I want to be the perfect Prince Charming husband. And why am I so relentlessly after my clients and ringing them at times after hours and working at weekends and messaging on fucking Boxing Day? Because I want them to love me and respect me and think of me so highly. Because it's because, and that's like the kind of dark, like it, you're relentless all the time because it's selfish. I need to be validated. I need to be seen as the loving, supportive person. You know, I have that God, and the G might be small, but I want to rise it all the time. And that's why I have faith. That's why I have a spiritual wellness program, because I need to remind myself all the time. It's not about you, Jake. You're here, a spiritual being having a human experience. And if I don't balance that, and that's not to pretend, but I have to just, it's exhausting, right? But I have to go through from the moment I wake up in conscious thought to the moment that I fall asleep. I'm very much meditating all day. I don't sit and do breath work. No fucking chance. I could not do breath work. I couldn't sit and breathe. I can't sit and think, but I'm constantly meditating across the day. It's like, what's the official reason why I'm doing this? And then what's the underlying motive? And as long as I'm aware of those things, I've got a moral compass, I'm all good. Most wordy response to one question ever.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because what you were doing, you were verbally processing, because you were trying to figure out, okay, is this true or is this not true? And then I was watching you and observing. You're solving, because that's how we solve things. We solve things when we speak. We solve them aloud. We don't solve them in our heads. Often a big problem is everybody trying to do too much thinking, and they're trying to solve all their problems in their heads, which is why I value one-to-one coaching, actually just sitting in front of someone, speaking with someone, because as you're talking aloud, I was watching you solve that puzzle. At first, I'm not. You were very clear. I'm not pretending to not know anything. And then as we got to the end of it, actually, I guess the thing I am ignoring, and that's how you phrased it, is actually like, I don't sit still and I can't really do this. And like, I just got to be on it all the time. And you solved the equation aloud. And that's what coaching is. It's helping your clients solve the equations and holding that space and giving them that mirror for them to look in. And sometimes they won't choose, they'll choose not to look at it, but you were solving the equation. So some people call it talking shit.
That's amazing. So you define that as solving an equation for yourself through discussion, right?
100%. We have to verbally process all of this stuff.
Like consultancy one-to-one is the important thing, yeah.
Yeah, you were just solving an issue. Not an issue, you were solving a puzzle. You were like, okay, I don't believe that to be true, but if I was kind of to believe it was true, I guess it could be this, and then actually, yeah, it probably is this. And that's how you got to the answer. And that is where, you know, group coaching programs are great. And, you know, we've got a course, a self-paced course here at TMP, which is, you know, a lot more affordable for people that aren't in a place to invest into their one-to-one side. But when it comes to actually making reality changing shifts, you cannot be having somebody sat in front of you asking you the question, because I have a belief that the question is the answer. My job is to be so armed with top questions. What can I ask that's going to create a shift? And there, you said, ask me. We had a cut in the podcast. It cut out for some reason. And you said, ask me anything. Ask me a tough question. Go on then. And I went, all right, okay. What are you pretending not to know? And I just left it. And I just watched you and observed you solve the equation, solve the puzzle. And from there, from a coaching standpoint, I can then, you've built the foundation, and I can just add some polish to that and go, okay, that's great, that's perfect. And what if we added this on top? What about this? Or maybe I might ask a follow-up question. And okay, so for example, when a client says, I don't know, okay, if you did know,
Official
I guess if lines. I didn't know, I'd say this, and that's the fun. That's the
It's funny when that kind of I don't know. It's interesting that that's like we just because I have a big thing with my clients and kind of working with general population. I'm not defined. I'm not the expert as you are. So I just say, look, big part. It's three pillars to my business. The first one is dialogue. Fucking questions asked, action planning, what's up. And I say to them all the time, like, you got the plan on the app. Of course, you can follow the diet and the training. That's good. But talking's our solution. Because without understanding how you are feeling in your day and your perception towards what that day is, because it's amazing when they fill in their biofeedback. And I catch my clients out with, they do a snapshot on the daily habits on the app where they talk about their stress and fatigue of that day. So the marker's low. I'm not stressed, I'm not fatigued. You ask them on a weekly basis on bios, how are you managing stress? But they look at the other, don't read it and go, oh, I'm low. And I'm like, oh, you're not managing stress at all. But your daily habits, your average number across the last 7 days is really low. Or because they had one bad day, they're overrun with stress. They can't handle life. And it's like they kind of, they're not looking at processing things as much, which is what I really enjoy. Like, I like catching people out, which is kind of what you do to me there, allowing me to work and process through it. And just one more thing to add to that as well. I think a big thing from my experience is understanding what your flaws are, or not, because nothing's a weakness, right? Being predisposed to be anxious or struggling with certain elements of your well-being or facets of your life. Self-awareness is a big thing. And I think I can imagine just having this small chat is like, you will help people build a huge amount of self-awareness. But what I've been taught through my life is like that the self-awareness avails us nothing. It has to be a program of action. So going through anxiety and depression, one of the things that frustrated me most through the NHS Gateway and through therapy is like, look, you're anxious. Oh, that's so bad. Like everything you've been through, of course. It's like, and I kept going, well, but what next? I don't want to be on 200 milligrams of sertraline for the rest of my life. This is conditioned. And it's like Johan Hari's book, Lost Connections. It's environmental. Have you read that book? It's amazing. No. It's environmental. Oh, go and read. I'll send it you, mate. Johan Hari is like an editor for a big newspaper thing in America, but he wrote a book called Lost Connections where he researched depression, anxiety in all the world, and all these different societies. And it's like that ideal. You're born from experience, like religion, you know, you're just born to the right religion. You know, we're born from experience, aren't we? But he talks, that's what frustrated me. I was reading this book. It's like, well, it's not, you know, this has been conditioned. So I don't want to feel this way. So I've learned to go, well, I'm very self-aware now, but that avails me nothing if I'm not going to be actionable. And that's why I like what I do with clients is I demand the physical. No extremes, but we over here, you know, movement, human movement based on nutrition, doing your steps, looking after your sleep hygiene, an exercise routine over momentary force. Wherever your emotional state is or your well-being, your behaviors, if we demand the physical, we can start to match up because it's got nowhere to go. It has to come along at some point. And then it's all one more thing I'd add is around acceptance. You know I struggle to relax. I'm very high functioning. I don't like to slow down. I have to work on that. But I also understand acceptance. There is a part of me that you can't change everything. If you're kind of anxious, you're born from it a bit, you have to accept it. And you have to accept that every person, place, thing or situation is largely as it's meant to be. Nothing's coincidence or chance. That's what I had to learn. So everything that happens, something that makes me feel discontented, stressed, upset, uneasy, that's where prayer comes in for me. It's like, right, okay, well, this is meant to be. So this person, place, thing or situation is meant to be. Nothing happens by chance. And if it doesn't, it's not happening by chance, well, it's meant to be happening. So what the fuck am I going to learn from it? What can I learn from the mistake I've made? What can I learn from why this is happening? And it's not because like the sky fairy gods going, your mum died from cancer to teach you a great lesson and like living your life. It's not like that. Life goes on anyway. But it's like, well, how can I learn from it? And that's what I love about my awareness. I'm very self-aware, but then I can also try and notch and learn from it to recognize, okay, when I'm bubbling and doing too much, I need to let off steam. I need to sit back and relax. So.
There are two things I took out of that. One was your experience with therapy. Which is where we've kind of carved our niche, where all of our team are all qualified in specifically cognitive therapy, NLP, timeline therapy, those sorts of therapies. But at the same time, we've got performance backgrounds. And I think I'm surrounded by these individuals all the time. I mean, I'm very fortunate to be surrounded by sort of type A characters where we're like, that for me is my norm. But I understand in the rest of the world, that's not the norm. A lot of people come to this podcast because it's a place of solace. Oh, there's people like me. Cool. But I'm surrounded by it because that's what I attract. And
sorry to interrupt. What's a type A person?
A type A. See, the type A personality is that I'm on. I've got to go. I've got to be aggressive. I've got to go and get this shit done. I've got to go. Yeah. I'm surrounded by that. You attract what you put out on an unconscious level. But the thing about, I think a lot of ambitious minds get frustrated with therapy is it's empathy, and ambitious minds don't want, they want some empathy, but they're not going there for, I know this sucks. I'm aware that this sucks. I don't need someone else to feel bad for me. I need answers. I need to practically like give me something to action. Like give me something to do with that. So that's where I found the balance of, okay, there's a therapeutic intervention required here. So let's go into childhood and understand what that's about. Great, you've got that. Now, I want you to do something with that. Like, I know, I really want you to go and practice. Here's three practical steps I want done between this session and next session. Or I want you to write a letter. It's got to be the eulogy for your parents because you need to let that shit go. Go and write that letter. And then on a structural perspective, change to working times around this and then come back to me in 2 weeks and then let's see what's going on. And ambitious minds love that. But whenever they go to therapy, they feel even more disconnected and more lost sometimes because they're not getting the answers that, and again, you remember, I work solely, and this is where therapists aren't always a big fan of me because I work only with the ambitious mind. I'm only working with that bit. I'm not working with general population and I'm not working with serious mental health issues where people and I've been this guy where you can't even get out of bed and brush your own fucking teeth because that's too much. I don't work in that world. I understand it. I've been in it and there are incredible therapists that do that, but I don't. So sometimes what I say to the general population, general population therapist is like, whoa. But actually for the ambitious mind, they're like, this guy gets me. He understands me. He gets I can't switch off and he's not going to tell me that's a bad thing. It's like, no, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just only if it creates an issue does it become a bad thing. And everybody's got their own unique production capacity. And you know, evidence is becoming a bad thing. Your kid says to you, I just want my daddy back. Or your wife's like, yeah, you're not there for me. Or you're starting to make mistakes in the business because you're so tired and overwhelmed and burnt out. Or you start creeping into world behavior. That's when it's a bad thing. But if you don't have those issues, then the fact that you can do a 10-hour day and you're on it, that's actually pretty fucking cool. And you've got to love that part of you. So that was one thing that I picked up from that, which I thought was quite interesting.
I love this. This fuels me. Like that, but that comes back to the elite, you know. There's a lot of ego flex in it. I'm a fucking wolf. You know, I like being the underdog. I was never the good rugby player. I was never went to private school. I was never going to make it. You're not good enough, compassive about your shit. I was like, I'll fucking show you. And it was really good when it had the one channel. And like you're saying there, it's great if your capacity of life and all your facets of life are good and you've got that, you can do it and you're looking after yourself and kind of like, you're almost like your physiological matter, you keep yourself good stead, good sleep, good hydration, good food. Then you can have a capacity like that. You know, your capacity can be really high if you're a type A, as you say, which I've just learned today. But for me, when it went wrong, so I was like, I'm the underdog, I'll fucking prove you. When it goes wrong, it was like, what's the next thing? I'll be the fucking best bodybuilder in the world. And then you start to go to take risks, you know, you compass that with addiction as well. I think I'm sure people watching this, a lot of type A people are usually very highly addictive. It takes an addictive personality, like yourself, Kieran, where, you know, you're on it. If you're not channeling in it correct way, you know, you can't change the way that your body metabolizes a drink or a drug. I'm an alcoholic, so I have an allergy, a recognized disease. If there's anyone watching this who is suffering with problem drinking, I just want to say there's a solution. Like, I was like 3 bottles of vodka in a day on a binge, as much cocaine as I could manage. I would stay awake for 2 weeks, lose all the money in my bank. You know, I tried to hang myself off the back of those binges. So if anyone, I just thought, just within me, if anyone is watching this who is a problem drinker and suffering behind the scenes of their life, you know, there's always places to reach out. Samaritans, number one, but also like problem drinking solution, addiction solution. It's a fellowship from my experience that I just want to give that message.
Thank you for that, because
there will be high functioning addictions, for sure.
That will be hearing that. There was another thing that you said. and I'm conscious of time because we've got about another 6 minutes before we've got to jump off. Yeah. There's another, because you and I could do this for 2-3 hours, and we'll probably shoot another one someday.
You should do another one, bro, for sure.
Yeah. The there's another part you mentioned about flaws, and I talk a lot about, without sounding egoic, but people in this space, they're gifted. The problem with being gifted is it's like kryptonite. It's your superpower. Yeah,
kryptonite. I use this all the time.
Yeah. It's your superpower and it's your kryptonite. So if you look at some of the greatest artists, the entrepreneurs, what they're suffering, they're suffering very deeply, and they're actually tortured souls on the inside, and they have to express that in a certain way. And when you can learn to come at peace with those areas of, you know what, I do get anxious and stressed and overwhelmed, or you know what, sometimes I do throw my toys out the pram like a big kid, or you know what, actually sometimes I just can't concentrate on anything, and sometimes I do a 10-hour work sprint because that's how I work, and that's okay. It's learning to be at peace with that, and building a support network and setting your boundaries and showing up as a leader, because people think you can't lead through that. On the contrary, that's what builds leaders, and that's how you can actually move your way forward. So that was something I wanted to pop in on there.
Acceptance, man, that's so big. Like, surrender. Accepting who you are, as long as you're self-aware and you're actionable, acceptance is key. Like James Smith PT, ADHD diagnosis, that's someone who epitomizes someone who's like, look, he's not very like plain level, he's not a linear learner, much like you in school, but fuck me, a high functioner who he's had to learn that in his later life. But fucking how you reach high, like addictive personalities, type A people. Of course you're always anxious, of course you're always on it, you don't know how to relax, much like myself, but fucking use that kryptonite, man. That is fuel when channeled the right way. It's fucking, as long as you've got purpose and substance to that purpose, it's fucking amazing.
Jake, I've deeply enjoyed this, mate. We'll have to do another one sometime. I've got one final question I ask all the guests. I want you to forget the company, I want you to forget the brand, I want you to forget me for a minute, but what does the phrase total mental performance mean to you? If you had total mental performance, how would you know?
Total mental performance to me spells, like, my perception of that is like a complete inner workings awareness system that's going to open up everything, like all those corners of your mind, the weaknesses, the strengths. It's total, isn't it? It's a 360, right? So we're going to look at everything around that to make sure you're plugging all the holes. So you're going to plug your weaknesses, but you're also going to be actionable about what your defects, character, are. Mental is obviously the well-being. I'll be honest, I hate the word mental, because I hate when people talk about mental health, because your mental is that old archaic kind of way of, you know, calling people like that, you're mental, you are like, fuck that. It's, you know, of course, like, mental is everything within our brain. So we're like a 360 complete ideal of what is going on within, between your ears, and performance is everything, right? So if you're going to be totally mentally performing, that is the absolute plethora of what you should be. So yeah, I think it's a great name for a business. Total mental performance. I'm jealous. I want to steal it.
Yeah.
Total mental performance is great.
Total mental performance. My thing is like total, that's a brilliant definition, so thank you for sharing. My thought process is, well, total is across personal and professional. Mental, we are God with a little G, so we are the creator of our own experience. And performance, all my clients, they know there's another level. They know deep down there's another level of potential that's just waiting to be unlocked. And that comes through the vehicle of performance. So, yeah.
Do you know what I love about that? And just before I let you go, having touched now into the consultancy with TCC, the guys that work with through Ben, I thought I was at capacity with 110 clients and 2 kids and doing this on my own. No automations, no VA. Like what people will see on my social media, what I've built that just me. Right, I had like some mentorship and stuff, but I've built that through fucking relentless pursuit of trying to make like help people. But as soon as you touch base with someone, you say you like the people you hang around with, you the average sum of those people. I touched that, and Ben says, "I'll come heavy in January. You've got a lot of work to do." I didn't even realize where my performance could be when I've done that. Now at 116 clients on my own, before now building SOPs and a business and hiring staff, I'm doing more work than I've ever done. More work than I've ever done, and I didn't even think I had capacity for it. So I thought I was like a high functioner. Just proves that idea in your brain, like, we're not using anywhere near our capacity. You get the total going and the mental, your performance. Like, I think if anyone watches this and they think they're the hardest worker, I thought was the hardest worker, I'm doing stuff, my capacity is even higher. And then I have an hour conversation with you, Matt. I'm going away from here and I'm going to work even harder. And well, I haven't even had to pay you for that value.
Well, imagine if we can help you working harder and even smarter. We manage your energy a lot smarter, so you can get more done in less time. Fucking hell. Like that's essentially, that's what I play with, is how can I help this person get more done in less time? And if you look at Ben, when Ben came to me, he shared this on the podcast so I can share. Like, sure, his business was doing well, but like it was November, not last year, the year before. So it would have been about 14, 15 months ago. He'd come in and he was all over the shop. And then we just helped him slow down, speed up, do a lot of emotional processing from his childhood. And boom, if you look at the coach consultant now, he's on a completely different wavelength. So, mate, deeply enjoyed this conversation. Thank you ever so much. Where can everyone find you?
Look at that. That's cool. But easiest way to find me is jcabot07 on Instagram. It's Transform Coaching Online. That's the easiest way to get through. That's where you can find infotainment and someone who's a full-time idiot ex-rugby player who's looking to help people. General population, that's where I'm at. I look like a problem in the industry who's previously done steroids, but I'm just a normal dad, loving husband and father who wants to fucking help you. And yeah, there's my little sales plug.
I love that, my dude. I'm going to name this podcast God with a Little G.
Yeah, man. Well, God is absolute. You know, that's my faith, mate. God is absolute. He's either everything or nothing. And my life's been repaired massively from a spiritual faith. Yeah. Not religious, spiritual faith.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that, Jake.
God bless, man. It's been such a pleasure. I really look forward to doing it again if you'll ever have me on.
Awesome. So that's us for today, team. I want to say a huge thank you for spending this portion of your life listening to us. A couple of things before you disappear. If you're not already following us on Instagram, you can find all of our daily content on mindset and hitting peak performance at Total Mental Performance, or our website, www.totalmentalperformance.com. If you haven't already, please subscribe. You'll find us on Spotify, the Apple Podcasts, and all the other various different platforms. Big love. Thank you ever so much. And we're looking forward to speaking with you soon.